Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. I bet you get 30, 30, I bet you get 30, I bet you get 20, 20, 20, I bet you get 20, 20, I bet you get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month, sold.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Did you know cats tend to hide symptoms of sickness and pain? I learned this the hard way after losing my cat, Gingy. So I created Pretty Litter, a health monitoring litter that helps detect early signs of illness by changing colors, saving you money and potentially your cat's life. Pretty Litter is veterinarian developed, and it's the easiest way to keep tabs on your fur baby's health right at home.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
Support WrestleTalk!
Give us a subscribe.
Hey everybody, I'm John Cena.
Hey, it's professional wrestler Colt Boom Boom Cabana.
Hey, I'm Double J, Jeff here.
This is Rich Swann.
Matt Riddle, the King of Rose.
Support WrestleTalk.
Support WrestleTalk.
Support WrestleTalk. Do it, bro.
Support Ollie. Support Luke. Support WrestleTalk.
Support WrestleTalk. Home of Luke Owen. Whatever WrestleTalk is and whoever Luke Owen is. Quote the Raven. Nevermore.
WrestleTalk Rumble. Now and live.
Hello and welcome to the WrestleTalk podcast. I am Luke Owen and this week I'm joined by Denise Salcedo. Hey, Denise.
What's up? I'm glad to be here. I'm very excited about it.
Yes, it's been very, very nice having you on the show. Thank you so much. Nice and early for you start today, I believe.
Yeah, I woke up like at 6 a.m. to get ready and, you know, I was ready to go. I was even a little too early. I misunderstood the timing and I was ready a half hour before, lights on and everything.
Right, well, let's dive into the main portion of this show, talking about Kairi Sane's contract update with WWE, and we have got your mailbag questions. Here is the show. Joined by special guest, Denise Salcedo. How are you?
I'm doing really well. I love how you say my name with such enthusiasm. I was like, yes, that's me.
So for our good viewers who might not be aware of you, if they didn't watch the excellent episode of Quizzlemania this week, why don't you tell the fine folks who Denise is?
Yeah. Okay. So a little bit about me. I do several things. So first of all, I run my own YouTube channel called Instinct Culture by Denise Salcedo. And on there, I cover both pop culture and pro wrestling, which can sort of be a little confusing at times. But for the most part, I found a way to make it work. And I have like over 100 interviews up there with some of the biggest stars that you can think of, from WWE, Ring of Honor, TNA, Impact, you name it, they're all there. And then I also used to host alongside Sean Waltman on X-Pac 12360, so a lot of people kind of started getting to know me there. And then most recently, I work with on Fightful with Sean Ross Sapp, and I do the post-Raw show, so that's where a lot of new people know me as well. So kind of a little bit of everywhere.
If I remember right, you were part of the Hell in a Cell watch-along party,
yes,
right?
I was.
You were there when Sean Waltman started freaking out about the finish.
When he snapped, he full-on snapped, and I was like, uh-oh. I just looked, and it was kind of one of those things where I know it sounds, first of all, you got to understand, like, I was completely nervous. Like, this was my first time going backstage at WWE. I didn't really know what to expect. You know, you want to make a really good impression. So I was really nervous, and I was like, okay, I'm just going to go and do what I do best, blah, blah, blah. So we're doing the watch along, and at some point, I don't know where, but you kind of just forget, like, you're just watching wrestling. That's all it is. And the next thing you know, this finish happens, and I have, like, this this look on my face that my fiance screenshotted to me and sent me. And I think it was like a horrible reaction. And I was like, did I seriously make that face? He's like, yeah, you did. And I was like a bunch of curse words floating in my head, but I didn't realize it, because at that moment Sean sort of took over and had like this big reaction. It was so funny. And I just looked at him and I was like, I don't know what to do. So I was like, whatever, you know what? It is what it is.
Yeah. But still, a very fun show.
Yeah, it was. It was a really great experience. I'm very, very thankful for that opportunity.
Right, so we're going to be talking today about Kairi Sane and WWE. So last year, it came out that Kairi Sane's contract with WWE was going to be coming up this year in 2020. This was her, the final year of her contract after she signed joining the Mae Young Classic. And around that same time, Stardom were, I mean, they weren't exactly subtle about it. They basically said, yeah, we really want to bring Kairi Sane and Io Shirai back into our fold. We want to bring them back to Japan. And Meltzer reported that Sane was essentially considering it and was, you know, looking to go back to Stardom and, you know, go back and live out there. You know, her family is over there. Her fiance or her husband is over there. I can't remember if they're married or not. And go back to Japan. And then you kind of get into the WWE run that she has had on the main roster. I think she did some great stuff in NXT. But the main roster stuff, she got thrown into a tag team with Asuka that I never thought she was particularly into. The heel run they had with the tag belts was good, but then she had the concussion in the Charlotte Flair match. Then there was the Buckle Bomb incident with Nia Jax. Then the ring step incident with Nia Jax. And we haven't seen her on TV for ages. And the latest report we've got is from your good friend, Captain Dickhead, Sean Ross Sapp, who said the Kairi Sane with WWE was pretty complicated as of last month. She hasn't been seen on TV since sustaining a cut to the head during a match with Nia Jax. Many have been asking about Sane's contract status. That we haven't heard, but as of May, there were plans for her to return to Japan and serve as an ambassador for WWE there. We haven't been provided with any details as to how that would have affected her in-ring career with the company. We did ask if this role was to involve the long-rumored expansion into Japan for WWE and NXT, and were told that there is no expansion at the moment due to the COVID situation. We were not informed as to whether or not the original plans for Sane were to go far enough to discuss that. In the weeks that followed, many have gone radio silent about Sane's status with the company. Many want her to continue wrestling, and all those we've spoken to have positive things to say about her. To be clear, we are unsure of how the situation has developed over the past month. So, yeah, I think it's, I mean, sending someone over to be an ambassador for the company kind of feels that they were almost done with her in-ring career. So, like, what is your feelings on Kairi Sane and her WWE run?
All right, so I'm going to kind of start off from the beginning in terms of Kairi Sane came in with so much hype. I know a lot of people that, you know, if they weren't familiar with her work, they were hearing other fans basically like, oh, you got to know Kairi Sane, you're going to love her, blah, blah, blah. So you had this very good positivity around her. And then she comes into NXT. And one of my most vivid memories for me personally was when I went to NXT Riverside and, you know, I was there live in the audience and I just remember out of every single, like, obviously we already knew Kairi Sane was popular and all of that, but there's a difference between knowing it from what you watch on TV to knowing it when you're actually there. And so I remember when Kairi Sane came out, the pop that she got there, I was, out of everybody, out of all the men, out of all the women, it was just like people lost it for Kairi Sane. And I just remember thinking, oh man, like, you know, Kairi Sane has been so consistently good on the NXT roster. And obviously the fans are reacting to that and they're respecting that and they're enjoying her work. And the thing about her is that, yeah, she's good in-ring wise. I don't even need to tell you that. But in terms of who she is personality wise, there's something about her that just gravitates you towards her. Like, it doesn't matter who you are or what type of person you tend to gravitate towards in the ring. She just kind of pulls you in. She just has that instant, just that instant connectability with the audience. So that was one of the major things that I noticed specifically when I was there. And I remember thinking like, oh, she is going to be like an even huge star when she moves up to the main roster. Because at this point, I don't think that I don't remember if at this point NXT was already on the air. But the point is that I was remembering that they were obviously still not seen as the same level as Raw and SmackDown. So obviously the point was for Kairi Sane to move up at this point. And then when she actually did, and I thought, oh my God, this is going to be great. And when she actually got paired with Asuka, I didn't necessarily see it as a bad thing. And I remember that when they were paired up and they were brought in as heels, I remember everybody being really, really upset about that. And I was like, why are people mad about this? Like, you know, the internet, there's always going to be people that they're for it. And there's some people that are not for it. People thought because Kairi and Asuka were so genuinely likable that they should automatically be babyfaces. But the thing that I thought it was the right call to make them heels, because the heel work that they were doing was so good, because it was kind of different. It was that heel that you love to see do, you know, all of these shenanigans in and outside of the ring. So I actually thought their pairings were really good. I thought they worked really well off of each other. And then most recently, with everything that happened with her in the ring with Nia Jax, etc., it just didn't really feel like that was the trajectory that we had in mind for Kairi Sane. I mean, she was essentially, yeah, they were doing good stuff in the tag team, but then at a certain point when Asuka got more into the main title picture, she sort of became a shadow. And it was kind of like, okay, like these are two women that more than they really deserve to be a feature focus here, but it kind of seems like one is taking a step back. And I was defending it before as, okay, it's just not her moment yet, you know? It's just not her moment, and that is not her time yet. But then it just kept getting worse. And I remember just keep seeing her versus Nia Jax every week. I think it was like several weeks where it was, that's what we were seeing. And it was like, why? Why Kairi Sane, and why in this match, and why in this way? Like, there is a way to make, both women or both competitors look good in the ring. And it just wasn't happening there.
Yeah, I really feel that. I mean, when we had Alex on the show last week, a term that we used a lot was WWE really dropped the ball with that. And I feel that is Kairi Sane all over. Like, as you said, like, I mean, I first saw her, someone sent me some of her stuff in Stardom when it was rumored that she might be coming over for the Mae Young Classic. And I was like, man, this is great. Like, as soon as she came out with like the pirate wheel and everything, and I was like, and the big hat, I was like, this is great. Like, this is such a fun character. And I was thrilled when she was still doing that at the Mae Young Classic. I'm like, this is brilliant. Great run in NXT as well as the Pirate Princess and everything. And I love the Sky Pirate scene that she did with Io Shirai. 100% that I think the plan in there was that Io was going to turn heel on her as opposed to Candice. And they were going to do it sort of an Io Kairi program, which I think would have been excellent. Which is why I was like one of those people that was disappointed about her going up to the main roster in the tag team. Because I was like, she's so good in that singles role, and Asuka's so good in that singles role, that I wanted to see them get that big push. When Asuka got her big singles push off the back of it, I thought, well, yeah, like you. Surely now's the time for Kairi to get the big singles push too. But she just sort of fell into obscurity. She just became Asuka's second and there to be beaten to build up whoever Asuka is facing, which I thought was kind of sucked. And when the reports came out that she might be looking to move on, I gotta be honest, I did think like, kind of good, I guess, because I think her going back to Stardom might be the best thing for her.
Yeah, and you know, here's the thing though, is that in this sense, I know we're just talking about Kairi Sane, but I'm sort of looking at the big picture. And the big picture is right now that there are a lot of incredibly talented women on that roster. Things have definitely shifted from where women were seen before and where they are now. And obviously, that's not breaking news. That's not a big surprise. But the thing is that I see so much potential in so many of those women on the roster. And I know that we've been talking about people like Bianca Belair. You know, we're just starting to get our moments with Io Shirai. And there's so many others. And, you know, yesterday when I was watching NXT, that was one of the things where I was thinking, like, you know, it really just depends. Like, if you get this lucky moment to really push forth and become, you know, somebody like Becky Lynch in the company. And, you know, we even just talk, if you were to step aside and talk about Becky Lynch's route, like even the things that she went through where she wasn't seen as, you know, she wasn't seen as a main eventer, even when she was in the main event, etc. And so it just, there are so many obstacles to getting to the top, especially as a woman. And I know this happens to the men too, but right now we're just focusing on, I'm just focusing on the women right now. So obviously there's so many obstacles and so many different things that could go wrong to get to the top. But the point is here that it sucks that it doesn't matter at this point if you have all the potential in the world. You need to have those moments to really get you to there, because there's no doubt in my mind, I'm sure there's no doubt in your mind and a lot of people watching here, that Kairi Sane could have easily been in that spot that Asuka is in right now, or even higher if, you know, written differently or whatever. But that's the thing though, is that so many women, I think down the line, we're going to be having this conversation, because at the end of the day, there's only so many spots available for both men, women, etc., to be at the very top.
Yeah, and looking at Sean's report that she was going to be sent over to be the ambassador for Japan, you know, which they also had that role pegged out for Akira Tozawa as well, but, which is, you know, to part of the big NXT expansion, the global localization, as Triple H used to call it. So I think he probably still does call it. And the NXT Japan really hit a lot of brick walls because they tried to buy various companies that just didn't work. And I really don't think that NXT Japan was ever going to get off the ground, even with Sane out there as an ambassador. But for me, putting her out there as an ambassador is kind of everything you need to know about what WWE think of her in-ring career with that company. So again, if I'm Kairi Sane and I'm looking at my contract coming up, I'm thinking, yeah, maybe not. I mean, I'm not going to certainly say go to AEW, but or Impact or anything like that. I'm thinking, yeah, you can go back to Stardom and do some work there. Particularly now that they're working with, you know, Bushiroad have got them, and they've got New Japan. New Japan put on the women's match at Wrestle Kingdom this year. So I think there's a lot more mileage going back to Stardom than there is being an ambassador for a company.
Right. And when you think about it, like, what does being a ambassador even entail? Like, what exactly does that even mean? I mean, I think that there's so many different people that can have so many different perceptions of that. And I'm thinking about it. If let's just say she was unhappy, I'm not saying that this was, you know, a fact. I'm just going to say hypothetically, if this is the reason why she's unhappy. If you put yourself in her shoes, like, hey, I'm, you know, a female wrestler and I go in, I don't want to necessarily just come off and be, you know, an ambassador someplace. Like, I think I would more, you know, I would go in with the intentions of being the very best, of being a Charlotte Flair, of being a Becky Lynch, right? You know, being the next Trish Stratus or Lita or Paige or AJ Lee. Those would be my intentions. And so I think that, I mean, obviously that's not the reason, but I'm assuming, like, if I were in that position, that would be my train of thought. In terms of, like, the expansion, it's pretty interesting, though, because I remember when I did talk to Triple H about it, when I covered WWE FYC, he did talk about the fact that they were obviously looking to expand in multiple countries, etc. And I think that, to be honest, like, it's cool, but I do like the idea of, I wouldn't say I'm necessarily crazy about the idea, just because I like, I prefer the incorporation of different styles all in one place to sort of enhance that one individual sector, I guess you can say.
Yeah. I mean, I was just having a quick Google then because I wasn't sure myself, but Kairi Sane's only 31. Like, that's still, like, so young. Like, she has got many, many years ahead of her to put out some amazing work. And, like, crikey, like, that her diving elbow is just, it's something to behold. Yeah, so I mean, so the big update, I suppose, is we don't really know where Kairi is with WWE. She just hasn't been on TV for ages. She's not mentioned on TV either. The Kabuki Warriors feels like it's a done thing now. Like, they don't feel like they're a team anymore. Asuka's very much off doing her own thing, which is a shame, because I really would have liked to have seen an Asuka Kairi program over the top, right, title. That would have been really, really good.
Like, similar to what they're doing with Becky and Bayley. Like, I think eventually
Sasha down the Bayley. Line.
Yeah. Sorry. What did I say? I don't even know what I said. Sasha and Bayley. Sasha and Bayley. So similar to what they're doing with them, I thought would have definitely worked. Would have definitely worked with them down the line. And it's funny too, because even with Asuka, I mean, for a while, you know, she was there, she had her streak, etc., and then she loses it, and, you know, Charlotte Flair sort of has her rising moment, and everybody was kind of, I think everybody was so set on Asuka having her moment during that point, and then that also fell through, and then who knows how different things would have been had Becky Lynch stayed with the company and, you know, not had to have left. But I know that's my general consensus in terms of, like, we still need Asuka to solidify herself as the champion, because still right now it's really just seen as she was handed the title, and obviously she earned it, but I think we still need to have more concrete to actually really have the fans be like, you know what, screw it. Yeah, she got the title because Becky Lynch left, but she's killing it.
Yeah. Well, let's dive into our Patreon mailbag. We're not going to be covering the AEW NXT ratings war, although I'm very interested in it this week because we're recording this on a Thursday before the ratings have come out. Before we get into the Patreon mailbag, you said you watched the NXT show. What did you think of it?
Yeah, so I watched the NXT show Sorry, I watched the NXT show yesterday, and then I watched AEW today in the morning. So, okay, so first of all, just like some quick thoughts. I'm pulling up the lineup here. So my quick thoughts were: I love the opening match. I thought it was pretty cool. I wasn't expecting Candice LeRae to get eliminated really fast. I don't even know if I was expecting Tegan Nox to actually win, but I'm really happy for her because, like I mentioned, so many women that have such great potential, and I think Tegan Nox is getting an opportunity of a lifetime here. Obviously, I don't think she's going to be winning, but still, it's an opportunity and it's a program for Io to sort of work with in the meantime. And so I think that's great. I love the strap match. I thought that Dexter Lumis, his character is really, really coming to life and really just sort of getting put together. And I think he's killing it, where like he comes out and the effect is there immediately. I'm creeped out by him. I'm intrigued by him. It's like this really big complication. But the point is, he's got my attention. And I just thought that the strap match was pretty aggressive. I thought that it was given the time frame, I thought it was really good. In terms of Io Shirai and Sasha Banks, I thought that the match had a lot of pressure riding on it. I won't say it was like the greatest match I've ever seen or anything like that, but I thought that going in with the amount of pressure that they did really, really good. I thought overall it was a good, solid match. Not my favorite. I wouldn't say it was my favorite, but they had a lot of really good moments in there. Oney Lorcan, Timothy Thatcher, I thought was really good. I thought it was a really aggressive match, and it kept me interested throughout the entire thing. So overall, I thought that from top to bottom, they had a lot of really good matches that were very different from one another. They brought something different each match to the table. And then AEW, I watched this morning, and I remember like right off the bat, like yesterday on Twitter, the first thing I was seeing was MJF talking about the ratings war. And I was like, oh man, like this one thing is already being picked up like so much more. And I think that AEW had a lot more in the sense of character and storylines to sort of stuff, and I think in that sense they excelled. But I think in terms of the wrestling, I think NXT stole it for this one. But there was also a lot of really good moments. I thought the women's match with Penelope Ford and Hikaru Shida was really good. I thought that one was I thought that they went out there and they really, really gave it all they had. The tag team match I thought could have been a little bit better. The main event I thought could have been a little bit better. And I thought the Cody match could have been a little better. So I think overall, one show dominated in terms of I really liked the storylines that they've had. But I think NXT sort of dominated in terms of the wrestling.
Yeah, I mean, Ollie and I said the same thing about the tag match. I think we might have put quite lofty expectations on it, given that it was Kenny Omega, Hangman Page, Chucky C, and Trent Beretta. But like, I thought the match needed another 5-10 minutes before it kicked into that final gear. I felt like it was just about to get into its final gear and then just sort of abruptly came to an end.
Yeah, and I felt the same way with Santana and Ortiz and Private Party. I was also expecting like a lot more. And I'm saying this because Santana and Ortiz, when they, you know, LAX and when they were in Impact, were my favorite tag team across the board. Good. 100%. Like, I remember like arguing like they are better than the Young Bucks. And I remember that. I probably will again. But what I'm saying is that I have a lot of expectations for their matches.
Yeah, absolutely.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot, we charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Did you know cats tend to hide symptoms of sickness and pain? I learned this the hard way after losing my cat, Gingy. So I created Pretty Litter, a health monitoring litter that helps detect early signs of illness by changing colors, saving you money and potentially your cat's life. Pretty Litter is veterinarian developed, and it's the easiest way to keep tabs on your fur baby's health right at home.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
Cool fact, a crocodile can't stick out its tongue. Also, you can get health insurance for a month or just under a year in some states. UnitedHealthcare short-term insurance plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage for you. Learn more at uh1.com.
Do you like quizzes? Do you like wrestling? Do you like watching self-professed experts in their fields being exposed as dangerous frauds? Then you'll love Quizzlemania, brought to you by Parts Funknown, the team behind acclaimed wrestling RPG No Rolls Barred. Join us every week as four wrestling pundits pit their knowledge against each other in a cerebral wrangle for prizes, glory, and a bit of good old-fashioned escapism. Enjoy the videos live every Wednesday on Parts Funknown's YouTube channel, or subscribe right now to have them beam straight to your mobile device. Quizzlemania, it's the showcase of the Immorons.
Right, well, let's dive into the Patreon mailbag. If you'd like to submit a question to the mailbag, all you've got to do is become one of our awesome pledge hammers on Patreon at any dollar amount. Leave a comment in the community section. Do not email me. I will just lose it. So Alex Kirkman is first up, who says, what's the single best commentary performance in a match? Mine is either Bobby Heenan for Flair's 1992 Rumble win or Michael Cole for Mankind's title win in Raw on Raw in 99. Michael Cole has his critics and deservedly so, but that performance is outstanding and takes the match up a star for me. It's interesting you say that as well, because I remember Foley saying that he wishes that it wasn't Cole doing commentary that night. Like, it was like nothing against Michael Cole. I just really wish it was JR. And I kind of get what Foley's saying about that. But yeah, I mean, Heenan's 1992 Rumble performance is so, so great.
I don't think I have a specific one in terms of, I just have like specific people that I just genuinely love their work. I mean, without going to say, obviously, you know, the most popular would be Marwa Nalo. Like, we already know that he's, you know, he's excelsior at what he does. All right. We already know that. But there's actually, I think that that Don Callis and Josh Matthews are actually my favorite pairing out of a lot of like recent announcers. I think that there have been so many matches that I have watched that I thought their commentary really, really elevated the matches, because and this was more like, I think more in terms of the pay-per-views for Impact, because I thought that they brought everything that I needed in a match. Like, they brought the analysis, but they also brought a background to it where I actually felt that as a viewer, I was being entertained and I was also being, I was also learning more.
Do you know what? Don Callis is such a good shout, because like the work he was doing over in New Japan as well with Kevin Kelly was really, really good. Like, his performance at Dominion 2018 in the Kenny Omega Okada main event, and like the Jericho stuff as well. He's very good at commentating Jericho matches because he's got all the history with Jericho. Yeah, Don Callis, man, really, really good. Underrated.
Yeah.
Marcus Campbell says, hello, Rest Talk. With everything going on, particularly with the hashtag speaking out movement, I thank you for trying to focus on the positives wrestling can bring. With D'Lo Brown leaving an Aces and Eights jacket on his chair talking to someone, I've got two questions. Who do you think he was talking to? And do you think Aces and Eights are going to return in full, or will it be a mini reunion?
I don't know for this one. I don't know if I have an answer for this one at all.
I think they probably are going to be bringing back Aces and Eights. And I think as well with Gallows and Anderson heading there, Gallows, former Aces and Eights member, I think we can probably slightly see that. Whether it's a full reunion, I think they could do whether they do like full reunion, I don't think they're going to get Bully Ray and Anderson and everyone like that. But I could certainly think them pushing them as a big faction again, I can 100% see. Prateek says, my question is basically this. Will WWE ultimately start collapsing? On the one hand, there are terrible business practices vis-a-vis Saudi Arabia, supposedly misleading shareholders, mass releases, the whole independent contractor absurdity, etc. And on the other hand, declining creative, lack of ability or will to create new stars, erratic booking decisions, and falling ratings. WWE's whole behavior and negligence during COVID has also caused major health risks for staff testing positive when they should not have. WWE is profitable right now, but how long can this continue? I think the exploitation and mistreatment of performance, bad practices, and the company's own absurdities will come back to bite them sooner or later. What do you think? Honestly, they've survived this long. They've survived through some major, major stuff. I think they're going to outlive us all.
Here's the thing is that I don't think people realize, or maybe some might realize, that how big the company is, how many people they have working there, how many like creative, smart people they have working on so many little things. I mean, there's somebody for everything. And so with just like looking at the scope of how large it is, I don't see that happening. I think there's too many people invested, too many people that care. And I know people always say like, oh, Vince is driving the product down, blah, blah, blah. But the thing is that I don't think he's doing that purposely. Like, I think he's doing what he genuinely feels is best for business. And so because of that, I don't see that happening. And I think that a lot of times people want to focus on the negativity. And yeah, but here's the thing, there's negativity everywhere, in every single company, in every single walk of life. And just because we're not seeing the full, you know, dirty laundry being aired out for everybody does not mean that it's not there. And I just think that all eyes are on WWE, and obviously they get judged a lot harder than other companies may. So because of that, I just don't see it happening at all. Like, I just feel like it's too powerful, too big, too grand. Yeah.
There are bigger companies that have done worse things that are still around today. Like, there are, yeah, I think they'll be, yeah, I think they're going to outlive us all of us. Nicholas says, with the ongoing global pandemic, the rampant and horrific mistreatment of both female and minority groups, and ongoing deals about morally corrupt nations and people and groups, my love of professional wrestling is waning to the nth degree. I believe that if AEW was forced to close its doors during the pandemic, I'm done. Wrestling has consumed my life for the entirety for the last 15 years. I've watched every Raw, SmackDown, ECW, NXT, AEW, NJPW, ROH, TNA, Progress, PWG shows to get my hands on. I listen to wrestling podcasts in every possible form. My question is, if I cut all of this out of my life, I don't know what I'm going to do with all this free time. I decide I can no longer handle pro wrestling laying on the old mental health. What should I replace it with? I need an escape, but this isn't that anymore.
I have no answer for that because I am in the boat of like wrestling consumes at least maybe 70% of my life. So, and I think I'm being generous, honestly. So I don't know, because if I were in a situation like that, I don't really know exactly what I would turn to, just because I look, to be honest, and I'm sure you can probably relate to this, is when you're a fan of something, and you've been a fan of something for so long, it's already a part of you. Even if you're not paying attention to it, you still know what's going on, because subconsciously, even if you don't even realize it, you're still following the news. You're still reading about it. You're still bound to click when you see a familiar wrestler's name trending on Twitter. You're still going to click on that. I remember when I was back in college and I was getting super busy, and I took like some time away from like really like focusing on wrestling. And I just remember that it was me supposedly not focusing, yet I was still going to all the shows, watching all the pay-per-views. I knew everything that was happening in major storylines, and that was me not paying attention. But that's because when you grow up a fan, it's just what it is.
Yeah, it's hard to get out of at times. Like, it's funny, I had the day off from work yesterday because I've got a lot of time in lieu basically from doing the pay-per-view live reactions. And I've got my podcast on the side that I do about this, about my 90s TV show from the UK. I didn't have an episode of that to edit. So I didn't have work, and I didn't have that episode to edit. I had nothing to do. I did not know what to do with myself. With my wife about this, and I was like, I don't know what to do. I'm kind of bored. Like, if I haven't got my work, and I try not to watch wrestling on my days off because I do it so much in my daytime, like in my job. So I'm like, oh man, I need a new hobby. Like, I need something to do.
Like, what else is out there? Like, what, read a book? I don't know. Go for a hike.
That's what my wife said. She was like, read a book, man. I was like, yeah, maybe.
Like, but my wife's a book. Should I read a biography or something?
The anomaly CJ Warren said, hello, WrestleTalk gangs. How's it going? Recently, me and my pal were discussing the best female wrestlers in WWE based off in-ring work alone. While debating this, I brought up Charlotte Flair and my pal insisted she's rubbish. Can I get your thoughts on this? In your minds, is Charlotte one of the best wrestlers in WWE today based off in-ring work alone? Yes, she is. She's awesome.
I have to definitely agree with you and disagree with the friend who thinks that Charlotte Flair is rubbish. I get so triggered online when people are like, yeah, I get it. We're seeing Charlotte Flair all the time. Yeah, I get it. People weren't happy that she won the Rumble, etc. I get it. I get all of that stuff. But at the end of the day, Charlotte Flair kicks ass. She goes out there. She's got her working shoes on every single night. And I mean, honestly, she set the bar. She set a certain bar for all of her matches. And I don't even think people really realize that when she goes out there, like, she never has bad matches. They're always good. And when they need to be even better, they are. And that's the thing. And here's the thing about Charlotte too, is that I'm not just like, aside from her in-ring work, even her promos, like, she gets to the point where she can really piss people off. And that's obviously a talent, because so many people try that, you know, so many people try to be the bad guy, but they can't necessarily persuade the audience. And Charlotte Flair does that so much, so well, that I think it's even carried over and bled over into, like, you know, who she is or whatever. So because of that, I gotta say that Charlotte is, I'm gonna say, my favorite women's wrestler right now.
I think she is, and I mean, we've said this many times on this show, I think while she's not my favorite character in WWE at the moment, like, you cannot deny how good she is in ring. Like, it's amazing. Her match with Ripley at WrestleMania this year was the best match over WrestleMania weekend. The triple threat at the NXT In Your House show was the best match of that night. Like, she brings it every single time. I think she's so, so good. I don't like the way the company push her at times, and I think I think it's a case of overexposure, and I think that it's a WWE's detriment. But yeah, when she's on form, man, and she's very rarely not on form.
And there's another thing that I do want to mention about Charlotte too, is that in terms of when WWE goes out and they do these, you know, big crossover events, whether it be, you know, at the ESPN Humanitarian Awards or ESPYs or any of that sort of stuff, or when they're promoting any of their programming, Charlotte is one of the people that they constantly have with them. And I got to say, after interviewing her several times, she has this persona that makes the company look really well when they bring her out. And as you know, they want people out there like Roman Reigns, Becky Lynch, John Cena, that can make the company look really good. And I think that Charlotte Flair has done a tremendous job at that. Like, I've been seeing her interviews with other people, and she just knows what to say, is spot on, and comes across as genuinely likable.
Yeah. So she was over for the BT Sports announcements when they moved to BT Sport here in the UK. And they did a bus tour around London. And I think that, like, everyone was really great on that. Like, Sheamus had it, you know, he had a really good day. So did Nikki Cross. But Charlotte Flair was so, like, I was just there just like kind of like half listening to the interviews that she was doing with other people. And she was just on form all day long. While I think, you know, some people got quite tired and cranky towards the end of the day, Charlotte, man, she was on it all the time.
Yeah.
Dylan from Cork. Good lad, Dylan. Hello, mate. What is your favorite year as a wrestling fan? Mine would have to be 2016. This was probably the last year I loved what was going on with the main roster. It was the peak of my NXT fandom. New Japan was great, and it was the first year I started regularly going to independent shows around Ireland. I even went to an ICW show in Dublin on my 18th birthday and met Drew Galloway. Fun times. Yeah, what's your favorite year as a wrestling fan?
So mine is 2005. And the reason for that is similar. is because I went to the most events that year. And that's also when I started heavily going to indie wrestling as well here throughout Southern California. And when I was really introduced to it, and because, you know, I grew up a WWE fan, that's how I grew up. And so when I started being, when my uncle started showing me the world of independent wrestling, it was a whole new world to me. And that was when I sort of, you know, started going to PWG. I was going to all these random lucha shows, like some pretty low rent ones, but you know what? They were entertaining. Okay. And so I would say 2005, that was also the year I went to my first WrestleMania. So that's always, you know, stuck in my head. And and it was also like during that time where I was just like eat, sleep, breathe wrestling. And, you know, I mean, I had already for like a few years back, but I think that 2005 was just a culmination of all of it.
Yeah, 2005 was the year I got back in.
Oh, really?
I dropped out after 2002, and then really got heavily back into it in 2005. That was the year that pulled me back. But yeah, for me, my favorite year of wrestling is 2000. That whole 2000 period, I think from January to February, WWE just, it's an insanely good year. Every single pay-per-view is fantastic with some really underrated, like great matches of the Attitude Era. I think it is the best from end to end. It's the best year of wrestling that company has ever done. I think it is just, it's flawless. The week-to-week TV was great. And I was really, I'd say was, aside from doing this as my job, was the height of my fandom. I was 14 years old. I was so into it. I was just like, I absolutely loved it. No, sorry, I was 15 in 2000. I just loved it. It's my favorite year of wrestling. Like if I do have some downtime, if I'm trying to have something on while I'm editing, that I will go and put on a 2000 era pay-per-view, usually Backlash.
Nice.
Blame Inc. Live. Why does Vince never accept blame? When something goes wrong, he always blames someone else. If he does something that's clearly his fault, he should be blamed. Not Bischoff, not Heyman, not Corbin, not the stars, no one but himself. I continue the network getting sick. I think this is kind of like what we were getting back to with that previous question. I don't think the networks are ever going to get sick of Vince McMahon because they love him. I talked to Brandon from WrestleNomics about this, and he said that the investors love Vince. Like, you know, when I asked him, I was like, do they buy into him sort of using Heyman as a scapegoat or Bischoff as a scapegoat or Michelle Barrios as a scapegoat and stuff? And he's like, no, because they like Vince. Like if Vince is there, they've got full confidence in the company. And perhaps it's just sort of like a personality trait. It's a businessman trait is to you find other people to put the blame onto things for, maybe.
Right. So, I mean, I necessarily, you know, I don't think that, you know, from my personal opinion, I don't think that if I'm in a leader position that I would place the blame on other people, because I just think it's a better quality just to, you know, take that responsibility yourself. But with that, yeah. But with that being said, I try to think, not everyone is the same. So I try to think of it as, okay, Vince is a businessman. That's, you know, that's what he is. You know, he's grown this company tremendously throughout the years. So obviously that respect is already there for him, from the investor. So I think that if anything, it's like you said, it's a trait that a businessman would have. Maybe not all of them, but I just can't. I don't know if it's a good or a bad thing, just because if it works for him, then it just works, right?
But also, like, Vince is someone you're never going to understand. Like, I don't even think that anyone really knows what's going on inside Vince McMahon's head, not even the people that are closest to him. This is a man who has been running this company for 40 odd years or whatever it is, and has rarely taken a day off. You know, he's a man who sleeps for 4 hours a day. If he's not working out, he's working on this company. He eats, sleeps, and breathes this company. So, I'm not sure I can give you a decent answer to that question of like, why doesn't he ever accept blame for things on that? Because, I mean, he's a man. A conversation can be ruined if you sneeze. Like, if you can't.
I know. I remember when I heard that story, I was like, oh my God. I was like, that's horrible. Imagine your first day on the job. You sneeze. You're out, bro. You're out.
Like, if you can't find an answer for that, like, there's no way you're going to be able to answer the other question.
It's just so sad, too. Like, are you the double sneezer? Like, if you sneeze once, you got to sneeze again?
Oh,
no?
No. I'm worse than that. Like, I'm three or four. Like if I'm going to sneeze, I get into a series of it. Like I get it from my dad. My dad sneezes like 11 times if he gets into a row of things.
Right.
So yeah, there's no way I could work with Vince.
You're gone, buddy. Like, you're gone.
Chuck Turner said, "Hey, Wrestle Talk family, do you know there are 8 wrestlers who've won World Heavyweight Championships, be it the NWA TNA Championship, WCW, WWF Championship, World Undisputed, blah, 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 in 3 different decades? The Rock's done it, Triple H has done it, Hulk Hogan, Ric Flair, Kane, Goldberg, Sting, and Lou Thesz, with Kane winning 3 different titles in 3 different decades and Goldberg winning titles in 4 different decades. My question is, do you think anyone will join that list? And if so, can anyone match Goldberg? Thank you and be safe."
Dude, try to match. Okay, so make it on the list, probably, I think, eventually. I know it probably would be too early to say. But in terms of, like, matching up to Goldberg, I mean, you just got to understand, like, it was just a different time then. So many viewers, so much wrestling was seen just a little bit differently then. I don't know if anybody could essentially, like, match up to the popularity of that. But I think it is possible.
Yeah, so Goldberg won it in the 90s, the 2000s, the 2010s, and then, yeah, now. I mean, that's crazy, 4 different decades to be champion. So Cena has had 2 decades. I think he could definitely get it in this era as well. Whether he could win the title again for a 4th decade, I'm not sure. There's certainly no one else on that list, like Rock, Triple H, Hogan, Flair, Kane. They're not winning a title this year or in this decade. So, yeah, I don't know, man. Like, if you could find a character that has sort of... John Cena's the only one I could think of that could be long-standing enough that he could come back in 10 years' time and WWE, like, he'll pop a rating. They'll be like, let's put the belt on him. Let's put the belt on John Cena. And
depending on where he's at Hollywood-wise.
Well, that's it. Yeah, yeah. I think John Cena's probably the only one I could think of that might be able to win it across 4 different decades. Irakli says, "Do you think we'll ever see AEW or NXT spoil results of the other shows?" I don't think so. I think we're past that period of time now. And like, WCW didn't do it as often as a lot of people kind of think that they did. I don't think we're going to get that now.
No, I think because it's kind of like tasteful tactic. And I just think that nowadays things are so different. Can you imagine the backlash that WWE would get if they did that to AEW?
Oh, yeah.
Can you imagine that? Like, that would be just too insane. And so I think that nowadays, because we're more in a let's be nice to each other period, that I just don't see it happening.
Ashley says, "My boss has just told me our working from home setup is going to be another 12 months minimum, meaning I've got a lot of free time on my hands. Was thinking of doing a long-term pay-per-view watch-along project. I've narrowed it down to either every ECW pay-per-view or WCW pay-per-view, starting with the NWO, as I didn't grow up watching either of those. Any recommendations? Welcome. What do you think?" Well, I mean, I've laid it out. 2000, start to end. You could do that. That's a great year. The Attitude Era from start to end would be a lot of fun as well.
I think she could definitely do the WCW one. I think would be really fun, but I won't be surprised if she ends up doing both.
Mm-hmm. Manraj says, "After watching FTR in AEW, they somehow seem cooler than they already were being portrayed when they're in NXT. Sasha Banks has been on every program recently. I noticed she may be the best in-ring worker of the 4 horsewomen. I do believe the rest are all great, but I think she makes it look effortless. Just curious on what your thoughts are on this." Actually, yeah, I'm going to take some umbrage with what you said earlier, Denise, when you said that Charlotte's the best. Sasha was the best worker of the 4 horsewomen and always was.
I'm going to have to fight you. I still stick with Charlotte. I'm sorry. I love Sasha. I really do, but I just prefer Charlotte a little bit more.
Oh, we're going to come to blows over this.
I know. I'm sorry, but I'm a big fan of what Charlotte has done. And I think the fact that she doesn't always get the love from people, I think has driven me even more to be like, you know what? I need to nail this nail down with, I don't even know what I'm saying anymore. The point is, go Charlotte.
Dwayne the Gronk Johnson. "Hi guys, I was wondering if you've ever watched Miz's reality show Miz and Mrs. Unlike Total Bellas, it's actually quite good. At times it feels like a sitcom rather than a reality show. Miz Dad and Maurice's mum are the highlights. One of my favorite moments is when Miz Ziegler and one of their friends take Miz's daughter to a music class when they're all hungover. If you haven't seen it, definitely give it a watch. You'll have a great time." I personally have not. I've never watched a reality TV show in my life. It's not my cup of tea of TV watching. Denise, are you a fan of Miz and Mrs.?
Very right. Now, I know because I'm a female, people think that I'm all about reality TV, but I don't like reality TV, to be honest. Unless it's competition-based, I really don't like it. I have seen a few episodes of Total Divas and the Bella Twins. I have seen a few of those. I have not seen Ms. and Mrs., but I have heard good things about all of those shows in terms of like the things that they have on there. And it's funny because when I tell people that I'm a wrestling fan from like different workplaces, the one thing they say, like, oh yeah, I know the Bella Twins. And that's who they know. Why? Because they watch these reality shows. They don't know anybody else or anything. But so I'm like, okay, well, it's working in terms of getting people that don't watch wrestling at all. But I think for the most part, a lot of people that do don't always watch the actual reality shows. And that's me. Although I do want to see Cannonball, though, with The Miz. Looks really good. I know. I'm just into all of that, like, you know, you put your body in the line and you do all these wild stuff. I'm really into that. So
yeah, it's funny you should say that as well. Like my, an old boss of mine, she was not a wrestling fan, but me and my buddy went to a WWE show and we said we're going to a WWE show. And she was like, can you get me a Brie Bella t-shirt? Like, yeah, if you want. She really wanted a Brie Mode t-shirt because she absolutely loves Total exactly. Divas and Total Bellas, but she just has zero interest in wrestling itself.
I know, like my mom, I remember she didn't know who Ronda Rousey was, but she knew who Nikki was. And I was like, okay, that's really weird, but I see based on her what she watches, I see how that can be a thing. But I was astonished. She didn't know anybody, but she knew Nikki.
So, reality-based competitions, what's your favorite competition reality show?
I like The Voice. I was devoted to that for a couple of seasons, and I covered several seasons. So I was very into it for a while. Then I got burned out.
Yeah. I mean, over here, because we got The Voice over here a few years back, but like me and my wife, we've watched it initially, but then we just like, it's just never creating anyone. Like the people win and then you never hear from them again. So I'm like, that's no point in me watching this show.
There's like one person, I think, and I don't even remember if she won or not, but I think it was Cassidy Pope, and that was like literally it.
Jobba JJ says, hello Swath Nation and the incredible WrestleTalk crew. My question is the situation with Impact around their world championships. Now that Tessa is gone, Moose is the TNA world champion. What do you think is going to happen? Well, they're crowning a new world champion at Slammiversary in the four-way, which I think is going to be, I think EC3 is going to end up being the mystery person in that match. And yeah, you'll just build to, rather than instead of building to Moose and Tessa, which is what I think they were going to do, you just build to Moose and EC3 or whoever wins that belt. But I still think they're going to go with that champ v champ mentality that they, or plan that they had originally.
You know, first of all, I just want to say that if EC3 is the mystery opponent, dang, good for him, because he has so much character. He could do so, so much. I think that would be a good call. And, but in terms of, it's crazy because I don't think that, you know, there was this grand moment, even the moment when Tessa was crowned champion, it was kind of overshadowed by a lot of the stuff that was being talked about her in the news. So that moment was sort of overshadowed. And then after that, it just kind of felt like, I don't know, like I feel like there was an almost like a concrete plan there. It kind of feels like I won't be surprised if she would have had that belt for a lot longer had she stayed with the company. I just feel that Impact is that company, though, that no matter what, they always find some way to make it work. Now I'm curious too. I'm like, are they gonna get that belt back from Tessa though? Do I don't know what? If they have already, but I just don't expect it.
No.
Come on, think about it. She would have to go out of her way to ship that belt. I mean, come on, nobody likes to ship anything.
They're never getting that belt back. CamCross03 said, with this episode being posted on July 3rd, it's my birthday. Happy birthday. As my first mailbag to you guys, what is your favorite birthday gift or memory you have? Thanks for staying consistent for the last 5 years. I've been watching. Have a great rest of your day. Jam that jam. Yeah, what's the best birthday gift you've ever had?
You mean like wrestling-wise or not wrestling-wise?
Just your best birthday gift or your favorite birthday memory.
Okay. Well, my favorite birthday memory was actually a miracle. So this was, because I'm a big Taylor Swift fan. So when I went to the Reputation Stadium tour, on the day of my birthday, May 18, I had bought my tickets, right? And I got there to the Pasadena, to the Rose Bowl. So I thought my tickets were really good. And then I got there and there was this big old thing blocking us. And I was so depressed because I spent so much money on those tickets. And then turns out that they didn't even sit people in that section, but they sold me seats in that section. So I was pissed. But prior to that, my sister and I had entered a Kiss FM contest. Basically, you take a picture, you post the hashtag, you upload it, you upload the picture with the hashtag on Instagram. And the winners were to get pit tickets. So you would go to the very, very front. And so on my birthday, right 20 minutes before the opening act came out, I got a DM from Kiss FM and said, you need to be here before 7 p.m. Get your two tickets. You're gonna go to the pit. And I was like, so me and my sister like hauled ass. Like we ran like in big ass platforms. We ran outside. And get this, we had to go outside of the Rose Bowl. So I got to the security and I was like, guys, we have to go out. And they're like, but you know you can't come in. And I was like, what? They're like, we already scanned your ticket. You can't come back in afterwards. And I was like, look at this DM. We won with Kiss FM. So eventually I convinced the person to let me out. And I was so scared because I was like, if something goes wrong, I can't get back in. So I got there. They gave us the tickets. We're out of breath. And I ended up experiencing May 18 Reputation Stadium Tour at the very, very, very front. I couldn't get any closer than that. It was amazing.
Amazing. That's okay. I mean, I can't top that, to be honest. I don't think I wear anything. It's quite cool. I had a Stranger Things party last year. That was a lot of fun.
Oh, that's pretty cool. Who'd you dress up as?
So I dressed up as, I've actually forgotten the character's name now, but it's the one that Mikey 11. From the Goonies plays. No, what was Mikey from the Goonies character?
I only watched season one, so.
Mikey Goonies, I can't even remember his actor's name now. Sean Astin. Sean Astin.
I kind of fell off the wagon with Stranger Things. So.
Stranger Things. Da, 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 da. Oh, come on, just tell me his character name. Anyway, Sean Astin's character. I dressed up as him, dressed up as Dracula. Bobby. Bob Newby. Yes, of course.
Okay.
So I dressed up as him. My wife dressed up as Barb, but after she'd been killed off.
Yeah, so a lot of people were very upset. They were like, we want Barb back.
Barb deserved better, let's be honest. Marcus Campbell said, with WWE giving Backlash the tagline of the greatest wrestling match ever and Extreme Rules giving the tagline the horror show, will every WWE get a pay-per-view tagline going forwards? I can see them doing that. They love branding. They love doing that sort of branding.
Why not? I think, okay, so Sean Ross Sapp actually told us the reason as to why they chose the greatest wrestling match ever. And he said that it was because of SEO, search engine optimization. And basically what they wanted is for when people lay down the line to search greatest wrestling match ever, that that's what would pop up. And I was like, what? That's pretty smart, honestly. Like, own it. Because, you know, down the line, people are going to search that. I'm sure people have searched that in the past millions of times. So I actually thought it was pretty interesting. Now, in terms of some of the other taglines, I don't know. But I think it'd be pretty cool to sort of keep it that way.
Yeah, I think like they do love a branding and sort of like a theme around a show. Oh, sorry, I just thought of another birthday thing. So my birthday, 1992, I think it was 1992, which means it would have been my seventh birthday. I got a 3D Game Boy cake. It was a giant Game Boy with Mario popping out of the screen. And it was the coolest thing. And, you know, you light the candles and everything. My parents said to me, I was like, make a wish when you light the candles. And my wish was, I wish that Mario was real. And the following year, the Super Mario Brothers movie came out. So I genuinely believe that my wish had brought that film into reality.
What month is your birthday in?
December.
December. I was just a couple months old. I was rooting for you, though.
Man. Abraham says, hey, Luke and Denise, hope you guys are doing great. Quizzlemania was really fun this week. Who do you guys think is Bray or Braun's next challenger after their feud is over at Extreme Rules or whenever it ends? I think the next contender should be Daniel Bryan. I mean, I think the Bray Braun thing is going to continue on into SummerSlam because we need to get the payoff of Braun versus Fiend, right? Like, I think you do Braun versus old school Bray to extend this feud out even longer. Till we get to The Fiend at SummerSlam, 1 year after The Fiend's debut. So, but as for next challenger, I don't think we need to do Daniel Bryan Fiend again. like, you know, I think we've already kind of, we've gone down that route.
Right. So, I was thinking Sheamus. I feel like we haven't got it. I feel Sheamus is, I'm a big fan of Sheamus. I feel like we can do so much more. That Jeff Hardy storyline isn't going all the way. I would like to see him in that title picture.
Hmm. I mean, actually, funny enough, Callum has said, you know, very similar question. Hey, Luke ends at knees. My question is to do with The Fiend. Do you think they'll just stick to the cinematic matches when fans are back in the arenas? Or do you think he's not going to do any in-ring matches so his entrance feels special? Yeah, I mean, I think that cinematic matches will probably come to an end once fans are back in the arena, because as we saw with the House of Horrors, if you ask a paying audience to watch a TV screen for 20 minutes, they don't take to it kindly. It works now because there's no fans there, but I think, yeah, they'll go back to those Fiend matches that we were getting previously.
Yeah, with the cinematic matches, you run the risk of overdoing it too much and losing interest. So I prefer for them to be rare and creative instead of constant and mediocre.
Yeah, very well put. Yeah. I also, like, on the, you know, who could face next year, I'd actually really like to see Braun Jeff Hardy. I think Jeff Hardy going on sort of one last run for the main title, I think it would be really, really cool. I don't want to piss on your Sheamus parade, but he told me when I interviewed him for the BT Sport thing that he's got zero interest in going for the Universal title.
Oh, did he really? Oh,
yeah. Darn. Yeah, his title wants to win the IC belt because it's the one title he's never won. So he wants to add that to his collection. So, yeah.
Maybe things might change. Fingers crossed.
A couple more questions we've got here. First one from David Sidney, who says, I feel like I've missed out on something, guys, so please help me out. I watch every single WrestleTalk video and parts of Unknown video, apart from Quizlemania, because I don't have the time. And you keep saying jam that jam. I want to know where it started. Can someone explain? Because it's annoying. And maybe even show a video or podcast it originated from. Thank you. Well, I can show you the picture it originated from. Bang! It originates from this. It's from Quizlemania. It's a Hulk Hogan tattoo that says, I am that I am, but it looks like jam that jam. And it's just become a running joke for us, and it still makes me laugh. Okay, and our last question comes from RLT Sandwich, who says, I've got a question for Denise about representation. I'm a 25-year-old black male living in the United States, and last year watching Kofi Kingston win the WWE Championship at WrestleMania taught me a lot about how important representation is. Being able to see someone like you achieve these levels of success, be taken seriously, matters so much more than I ever thought, especially to young children. In regards to WWE, what's it like for you to watch the Give Divas a Chance and Women's Revolution Evolution, About Time We Take Women's Wrestling Seriously movements? Thank you all. I hope all is well.
Well, first of all, that's a beautiful question. So in terms of representation, I almost thought he was going to go the other route and instead and talk about like Latinos and, you know, Latino representation and all of that. So I'll kind of address both. So first of all, I think that I'm really happy that we're seeing more Latinos, you know, in these main storylines. You know, we've been seeing Angel Garza, Andrade, Santos Escobar, and so on. So I'm really happy that we're getting that. And obviously, you know, Lucha Libre within itself is, I mean, it's, I don't even have a word to describe the impact that it's had, you know, not just in Mexico, but throughout the entire world. So because of that, I'm really happy to see that aspect of that within itself. But to answer his question in terms of the women, I just think that it had to happen eventually, you know? I just can't see now with the times, if we were still going back and doing, you know, like people mentioned, bra and panties matches, you know, it just wasn't going to work like that anymore. And I'm really, really happy that we're not only just seeing, this is the thing, women are not just getting spots right now in WWE because they're women. That's not the case. I mean, Becky Lynch, Charlotte Flair, Ronda Rousey, perfect example at WrestleMania. They were the hottest angle. It wasn't because they were women. It wasn't because they were men. It was because they were the best ones. They were with the best storylines. They were selling the best, et cetera. And they got that moment to be the WrestleMania main event. And that makes me so happy because they didn't get that spot just because they were women. They got that spot because they worked their asses off to get that spot. And so I think seeing that, and even last night was a perfect example. You know, we're talking about this ratings war, and NXT had a women's match opening the show and main eventing the show. So that should tell you that they're putting a lot of, you know, not even putting a lot of eggs in their basket. I can't even say that. That should just tell you that they're really going out there and they're really killing it. And it's funny because I listen to a lot of wrestling podcasts, you know, when people call in and all of that stuff. And I would say that a lot of the calls are always focused on the women. A lot of people are always have questions about the women's storylines, women wrestlers, etc. So I just think that that goes to show that the women are doing their job in terms of really going out there and saying, yeah, we're more than a bathroom break. Like, we are a five-star match capable, etc. Whatever. We're main event capable. You name it.
It's what frustrates me so much about AEW. Like, I love AEW. I love the product that they put out. But, man, their women's division just does not get the time it deserves. And it's so frustrating because, like, you know, we were just talking about Fyter Fest earlier in the show. That Cheetah Ford match, for my money, was the best match on that card. I thought it was so, so great. But the women never seem to get enough time on that show. It feels so counterproductive in 2020 when it should be getting way more time. Like, I find it so, so frustrating.
Yeah, and it's funny because that was one of the big issues that I saw in terms of indie wrestling, where, you know, so many of the matches, the cards were all men. Like, as a ring announcer, I'm 99% of the time, I'm the only female there. There's no other females other than myself. And that's because they don't always put a lot of women's matches on the card because, A, they don't have enough women, or they're not interested. I don't know. But that's the issue where I think, like, we need to have more women's matches so that more young women that are aspiring wrestlers can have the opportunity to get out in front of a crowd and, you know, really, really showcase themselves. Because you know that the only way for anybody to get better in wrestling is by practicing, having match after match after match. And I still think that in terms of independent wrestling, we need to have more women's matches and more opportunities, because there aren't enough. You either get one spot, there's only max maybe 2-4 spots on the card. And so with that being said, like, I think there's still a lot more work to go. But I think right now, with what we're seeing with WWE, with what they're doing, I think that it's maybe shining a light on other companies. Like, hey, look at what we're doing. You guys should be doing it too.
So I want to use the sort of outro portion of this podcast to get to know our guest a little bit better, Denise. So first question, the obvious question. What got you into wrestling?
Okay, so I have a really cool video, by the way, that people can watch on my YouTube channel, but it's more of a storyline purposes, but I'll give you the short rundown of that. So I actually started watching wrestling at a very young age. I think I was like 8 years old or so, and I'm 28 now, so it's been a very long time. So the reason why I started watching is because my uncle, he was a teenage boy, really into the Attitude Era, really into wrestling, you know. He got his first job, and back in the day, we didn't have DVR to be recording or anything like that. You had to record everything via VHS and all of that stuff. So my uncle got his first job. He could no longer stay home and watch Raw. So he needed someone to record the shows for him. So he actually trained me to learn how to record. And so I would be there. I kid you not. I would be there like right at the dot. I would do my little job, put the VHS in, press record, and I had nothing else to do. So I would sit there and I'd be like, what's this stuff my uncle's always watching? And so I would stop and press record in between the commercials. So obviously I was there watching the product, and that's how I became a fan. Like, I just started watching it. And then I remember one day my uncle was like bragging that he was going to go to a UPW show. And I was like, hey, can I go with you? And he was like, sure, ask your mom. And my mom said yes. So I was like, okay, great, I'm going. So I went, and at this point I already knew a lot of the wrestlers. And I remember I saw Edge and Christian there. I saw Molly Holly that day. So it was a pretty cool thing. And then from then on, I just kind of kept going. He kept taking me to shows, kept showing me his VHSs, and it just developed from there.
Who were the people that you like gravitated towards early
Stone
doors?
Stone Cold and Chris Jericho, and then afterwards Triple H.
Oh man, good lineup.
Yeah,
good, solid lineup. So you're from LA, right?
Yes.
And you said that you go into a lot of the independent wrestling scene around there. Like, what's it like being a wrestling fan in LA? Because, I mean, you get a lot of shows sort of WWE-wise, but, like, there's also a lot of, you know, I mean, the Young Bucks, you know, they're Cali kids, sort of, you know, all around that area.
Yeah. So that's the cool thing about being in LA is that I was going to PWG for, you know, like I said, early, like 2005 was when I started going. And I remember I'd seen Kevin Steen, Brian Danielson. And then I saw, you know, so many people, the Young Bucks, everybody that now has gone on to make a name for themselves. So sort of knowing that I got the opportunity to see them at that early start of their career was really cool. And that's sort of when I got obsessed with following people's careers, like where they went to where they are now. So that's actually one of the things I really like to study. Like, I love to know how a guy went from here to here to there. And but it's really cool. So here, you know, prior, obviously, to COVID and everything else that has gone down, you know, we had PCW Ultra, which, by the way, is one of the coolest promotions out there because they attract a lot of casual wrestling fans and a lot of families, which is very rare. Wow. And they sell the tickets at a good price, so that's why they attract those people. And they bring in a mixture of different wrestlers. Like, that's where I got to see Angel Garza Jr. for the first time there, which was really cool. And then PWG, which obviously has just become like legendary, not just here but in wrestling in general, for all of the amazing matches that they put on. Bar wrestling was also got really, really hot here. And then the thing about, you know, Los Angeles is that there's also a lot of lucha shows. Like, there's one, like a few buildings that just run lucha shows every single weekend for multiple days. So you can really go out there, you know, spend a couple dollars, spend like a few bucks here and there, and just watch some wrestling. And it's pretty, pretty fun. So there's obviously a lot of options down here. And I don't get to go to all the shows because, let's face it, like, it just gets too expensive. And then we even have Suburban Fight as well, which I work for. And they do, you know, no ring, no rules. And then they also do collaborations with GCW, which I've been seeing some of the craziest things. I mean, we do shows at bars. I mean, it just gets wild. So there's a lot to choose from.
You're a pop culture nerd as well, not just in wrestling. So what shows are you watching outside of the wrestling world?
So I love, like, I have subscriptions to everything. I'm on Netflix, I'm on Hulu, I'm on Amazon, HBO, Stars, you name it, I'm on it. So I try to watch almost every single new show that pops in. I'm very into like, you know, teenage, those teenage shows like 13 Reasons Why, which has gone down the drain. So they're probably not a good example. But so I try to watch a lot of different shows. You know, there was Normal People that just came out on Hulu, which I thought was amazing. Oh my God, there's so many. I'm like blanking out. Zoe's Extraordinary Playlist. I mean, I could really go on and on. But the point is that I love to watch like several different types of shows, and I like to do recaps on them on the channel. But then I'm also like really into like pop music, so I'm very into like the pop queens of the pop world, you know, like Taylor Swift, Selena Gomez, Demi Lovato. So I talk about all of that within this umbrella. And I know it sounds weird, but there's actually a lot of people that are like, you know what, Denise, like, this is cool, like, I'm both a Swiftie and a wrestling fan, so it kind of works.
My wife's watched Normal People. I didn't actually get a chance to see it in the end, but I've heard it's very good. My favorite review I've heard of it, though, was from as a radio DJ over here, said that I had to stop watching it because it's too good.
And with Normal People?
Yeah, it's like it's too good, and it just made me sad that I will never make anything this good.
No, it was really good. I felt like I went on an. I felt like I lived a whole lifetime after that. And it was only like 10 episodes. I watched it all in one day, but that one day I had a whole life.
What's your favorite show to binge?
I have a few. So right now I'm watching The Brady Bunch. I'm really into reruns, old reruns. I love The Brady Bunch. I love Lucy. Those are my go-tos. No, this would not be modern at all. Friends, How I Met Your Mother, Sex and the City. So I think I binge watch more of the older shows. Like, those are the ones that I can see over and over again. A lot of the new shows, I see them once and I'm done. But those are the shows I can rewatch.
It's nice to hear an American say that they watch a lot of Friends, because we've found over the years that our American viewers, which is predominantly what we have, find it so bizarre that Ollie and I talk about Friends quite a lot. And Friends is, because here in the UK, it's on every single day. Wow. And not just every single day, multiple times throughout the day. Comedy Central here shows 20 episodes a day, maybe.
Wow, it's so crazy how popular it is.
It's not like, and it's show ended like 15 years ago. It is still on all the time.
I like it. And I really, really like it. Like even now, like I still laugh at the same jokes.
Although me and my wife and I were doing some housework the other day and we were like, oh, we'll just throw Comedy Central on. We'll watch some Friends while we're doing this. There was an episode on that I've never seen before. And I turned to my wife. It was a later season episode where Chandler and Monica need some money. So they ask Joey for loans.
The boob job one?
Yeah. And so Joey presents us for a boob job. And I said to my wife, I was like, I've never seen this episode. And she was like, there's no way you have never seen this episode.
You probably just forgot.
That's what I think it is. I think I've seen so many episodes of that show and so many I've seen 20 times over that I've just forgotten some episodes.
My favorite episode is the one where it's actually the most dramatic one. I think it's the one where after Ross cheats on Rachel and they have that confrontation in the living room and it's just them fighting and he's like begging her. I was like, oh my God, this is so sad.
Oh, do you mean, the We Are On A Break episode or the one where
where he's like begging her like for forgiveness for cheating on her with the copy girl.
The copy girl, yeah. It's not the after the beach house one. Mine is the quiz show. It's when they have the quiz to who's going to win the apartment.
Oh, yeah. And they gamble the apartments. That one's good.
So great.
What does Chandler do?
Chandler Bong. Yeah. Right. Well, I think we're going to get out of here. I'm going to let you get on with the rest of the day. What is on the plan for the rest of the day? What's the agenda for Denise?
Honestly, I need to brainstorm new YouTube videos. So that's sort of my day. I need to get back on the horse because I fell off the last like 4 days. So I need to get back on there and return the brainstorming wheels on.
Absolutely. Well, good luck with that.
Thank you.
As a reminder for those people who didn't hear it on the show, where can people find you?
Twitter and Instagram @_DeniseSalcedo. I'm always tweeting during the wrestling shows and random times as well. And youtube.com/DeniseSalcedo. That's the place to go. That's my baby. So youtube.com/DeniseSalcedo.
Let's get ahead to that 50K mark by the end of the year. Thank you so much, Denise, for taking the time out to be on this podcast. It was really a lot of fun. Thank you so much.
Thank you. Bye.
Thank you. Well, we've got another podcast out tomorrow. Pete and Andy will be doing the SmackDown review, and then Ollie and I will be back for the Raw review the following week. All the usual good stuff. Until then, have a good weekend. Take care. I love you. Goodbye.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes. Without the ads.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Did you know cats tend to hide symptoms of sickness and pain? I learned this the hard way after losing my cat, Gingy. So I created Pretty Litter, a health monitoring litter that helps detect early signs of illness by changing colors, saving you money and potentially your cat's life. Pretty Litter is veterinarian developed, and it's the easiest way to keep tabs on your fur baby's health right at home.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. Quince.com/style.